took a little longer than we had expected.
I'll call the first case 97-3078, John Stelflug versus the town board. Mr. Martin?
May it please the court, I'm attorney Donald J. Mern. I represent the Sheeses and the Schwartz in this matter, who are the petitioners in this case. There are two issues presented in this case. One is whether a compensable regulatory taking occurred with regard to the acts of the town, and the second is an issue regarding whether or not the law should be extended to award attorney's fees in a situation of a regulatory taking under Article 1, Section 13 of the State Constitution. Article 1, Section 13 of the Constitution, as the Court is well aware, states that property of no person shall be taken for public use without just compensation. The law must force governing bodies to follow the rules of the Constitution and not the governing body's belief as to what is correct. As this court has stated, I believe in Howell, in quoting San Diego Gas versus Electric and Gas and Electric versus San Diego, the Constitution measures a taking of property not by what a state says or but by what it intends, but by what it does. In enforcing the regulatory taking cause of action that was created in Zinn versus State, basically, the proponent of the regulatory or the cause of action for regulatory taking must pass a two-pronged test, whether the action creates a legally enforceable restriction and whether all or practically all the use of the property is taken. In the case at bar, we have a chapter 80, which is a statute on laying out roads, being used in an improper fashion. The Sheeses and the Schwartzes were not initially notified of this chapter 80 proceeding, and were first made aware of the fact that there was an action against their properties when they received a letter from the town with a check stating that their property had been condemned and awarding them damages. At that point, they intervened in the case, and in the motion to intervene, which was granted, the court allowed them to go back to the Condemnation Commission on the issue of damages only and not on the issue of whether the condemnation was appropriate. Needless to say, neither party cashed their check and continued along the line of litigation. The initial Condemnation Commission order was issued on 10/29/92, and the matter regarding the laying out of the road was resolved by the stipulation of the parties on 2/28/95. In other words, the parties stipulated to dismissal of the action and a non-laying out of the road. The issue then becomes, was there a regulatory taking between the 10/29/92 Commission order and 228. Chapter 80 does not specifically state that title passes on laying of the road, but affirmatively assents to that contention in Section 8032, which discusses revision of title. In other words, there's actually no language in Chapter 80 that says at a certain point that the title to the road that's being laid passes the town. However, further in the statute, it does address the reversion of title if the town takes no action in actually laying out the road.
Now, here, excuse me, it was kind of unusual because subject to the condemnation and after the town took the strips from both of your clients, Hees and Schwartz, there was never any, it was filed, but it was never recorded, correct?
That's
so
correct.
If I, as a bona fide purchaser for value, came in and looked at that and did a search, I would never know that there was any condemnation. How would that affect it? If you're maintaining that it is not affecting it, it's that your clients knew that they could not convey this land, etc. But is that really what the law is?
I believe it is, Your Honor, because title may pass. If I have a deed and I transfer title to my house to you, it's up to you to record it to put third parties on notice. Title to the real estate is passed at that point. The recording statutes are set up to make sure that there's orderly records regarding who owns what. However, title passes on the deed being transferred to me.
And that's under the theory that if you could sell the property to five people, but the first one records would be the actual owner. But technically, it could be sold to different people.
Correct.
Right.
And obviously, the additional practical value of my clients could not have transferred the property without disclosing this defect, which obviously would no one would purchase it under those circumstances.
Mr. Murray,
let me just clarify something, if I might. It's my understanding that when the trial judge awarded damages in this case, that she looked at the period from 1994 to 1995, rather than 92 to 95. Why do you think we should be looking at 92 to 95?
Because I think the order of the Condemnation Commission had the effect of law of taking the property. The fact that we weren't aware of it, to me, is not germane to the issue of when the property was taken. If you use the corollary of Zinn versus State, then assuming that Mrs. Zinn did not get notice of the fact that a DNR hearing occurred, would that have lessened the taking of the title of her property by the raising of the ordinary high water mark? I think under the circumstances when the commission laid out the road and assessed damages, at that point, title passed. And whether we knew about it or not is not germane to the issue of when we were damages, when that regulatory taking occurred.
Whose obligation was it to notify your clients of this condemnation proceeding? Who should have done that?
Under the statute, the town should have notified us of the taking, or of the condemnation commission.
Did Stelflugs have any obligation to do that?
I think from a practical standpoint, but I don't believe from a legal standpoint.
And what about the condemnation commission? Wouldn't the condemnation commission normally notify all parties of a proceeding?
You would certainly think so, Your Honor. That was one of the perplexing things in first getting involved in the case, is how this could even occur when the actual person's land who's being taken is not notified until after the fact. That procedural fault is something that really put us in a position of arguing at a disadvantage already, since we were not made aware, we were not allowed to get involved in the decision of whether the road should even be laid out.
Is there a statutory section that puts the obligation on the town?
Yeah, I believe, Your Honor, that the beginning of Chapter 80, which sets forth how a laying out occurs, sets forth when the application is done, then any party, so I believe it's Section 8020, 80.02, petition to lay, alter, or discontinue, which sets forth how the road should be laid out. When all owners of the land abutting a part of the highway sought to be altered, they should be put on notice of the petition. And I don't know exactly where that is in the statute, but it is. There has to be a notice of the description of the lands abutting upon such highway which will be benefited, injured, or damaged by discontinuance of such highway or any part thereof. The application shall contain the description of land abutting upon such highway which will be benefited, injured, or damaged. And yeah, 80.05 then states a notice of the meeting and a service and publication after the application is made to the supervisors. It says that in subsection 2, at least 10 days prior to the date of the hearing, give notice by registered mail to all occupants and owners of land. So, yes, there is a provision. And then publishing by a Class 2 notice. Thank you. The town... basically,
Counsel,
I think that, yes, Your Honor.
Can you summarize your argument on why you're entitled to mitigation expenses?
I believe that under the just compensation clause of the state constitution, that especially in these regulatory takings,
I understand under Article 1, Section 13, but do you have any... And I know the argument then you address in the brief regarding the stipulation, whether or not that's binding, and you look at 3210. Do you look, as I understand it, look at 3210 and saying it doesn't prohibit litigation expenses or it doesn't really address it. You look at the stipulation and say you're not precluded because of the stipulation. And then you look to the taking provision and say you're entitled to it. It's just compensation. Well, what authority is there?
Your Honor, there really isn't any authority in the state of Wisconsin at this point, and I believe this would be a reasonable extension of the law for this part kind of a taking. Under the statutes, under Section 32, someone who's inversely condemned does have a remedy. And I think Chapter 32 and the sections that followed regarding inverse condemnation recognize that a taking by a governmental agency without going through the proper procedures for condemnation would put people at great risk. So the legislature took it upon itself at that point to fashion a statute that would give life to Article 1, Section 13, and make sure that people were justly compensated. And in fact, I believe this court in the Luber case in fact found a part of Section 32 to be unconstitutional because it limited the amount of damages that were available to an applicant. So the problem is we're dealing with this next area of regulatory takings, which is new and expanding, and is really a response to the societal demands of diminishing land and the use of that land.
I don't recall seeing any citation to foreign jurisdictions. What are other states doing on this?
They're grappling with the issue.
Have any of them decided it?
No. What they usually do is it's brought in a 1983 format. They look at it and say, well, you haven't exhausted your state remedies, therefore the 1983 issue is not right, and maybe it will be in the future, and good luck. That's what most of the states are doing. And I think what they're grappling with is the issue is there a reasonable and logical stopping point for this extension of the law to allow litigation expenses? All right, if we do this, are we opening up a Pandora's box of all the constitutional litigation issues that everybody's going to come in and say, well, you did it over here, you got to do it for me? Does that mean that every habeas corpus that comes before the court, now litigation expenses must flow therefrom? I think that can be appropriately limited by the fact that we're looking at strictly this section of the Constitution that calls for just compensation. And what you're having in these regulatory takings, by their definition, are not long-term takings. They're usually snippets of time.
Let me advance this. Sometimes takings are extremely contentious. I mean, Grandma and Grandpa don't want this part taken off their family farm that has the cherry tree on it. And they will fight tooth and nail for this. Now, heaven knows that cherry tree, as they say, is priceless but in reality, it's such a cherry tree with a couple of feet. So I'm just wondering, from a policy point of view, are we to fund these kinds of lawsuits that oftentimes by their very nature are exceedingly contentious?
I think there's protection in regard to the fact that there are ways to condemn property that basically, if the Highway Commission comes through, it's not a question of if, it's a question of how much. In other words, there's really little in the statutes that say that you can't really fight City Hall in that regard. If a road's going to go through, a road's going to go through, and the only question is what are your damages? And the legislature has set up a very specific procedure to go through to protect those people. And realistically, in their issue of damages, that little old couple will come in and say, but our cherry tree's been in our family for all those years, and we have to say, unfortunately, the law does not provide you recompense for that kind of a loss.
But what if they say, okay, then I'm going to appeal it because maybe my litigation expenses are going to be covered?
But keep in mind, Your Honor, that I'm only suggesting that under this particular circumstance of a regulatory temporary taking that litigation expenses are appropriate, not under those circumstances where the law is properly followed. Could there be abuses in that regard? I think in any area of the litigation, in litigation nowadays, there could be abuses. However, there's fundamental jumps that have to be taken, and under those circumstances, I think a court, the question of what a reasonable litigation expense is pretty well handled by the circuit courts. at the base level. They recognize that there are standards in our ethical rules as to what is a reasonable fee. I don't think any court is going to award $150,000 because someone fought over a cherry tree. They're going to say that, Mr. Mern, for instance, that's very nice, but the value of that land is very limited, and your effort in regard to protecting that land shouldn't be overboard. Even in a case as extensive as this, it's not cost prohibitive from a time standpoint.
Mr. Mern, as I understand the facts in this case, the town never really wanted to get involved in this. The town never really wanted to get involved in the first instance. The Steph Floods or whomever it was petitioned the town, and they just refused to act on it. And so it was really the circuit court that ordered the creation of the condemnation commission. I've got those facts correct.
That is correct, Your Honor.
So why is it fair to award damages for you against the town?
Because the town is the one who has the authority under the statute. The fact that they were
Town was dragged kicking and screaming into this thing.
They also didn't put... They also didn't put us on notice. They didn't get us involved in this situation in a timely fashion, which I think would have brought this to a head a little bit quicker. I think under the fact that they were recalcitrant in laying out the road doesn't impact the fact that they have the authority to do it and move forward and will ultimately take title to it. Maybe the town under the statute in Chapter 80, the town is entitled to the cost of this from the applicant. If the town can go back and order that Stelpflugs are the ones who should pay for the fact that this occurred because they started it. Well, the problem we're really having is dealing with a very antiquated statute and a confusing statute. Chapter 80 is not what I would call the bastion of logical progression in statutory construction. It's a very, very difficult statute to read, but that doesn't stop the fact that my people's land was taken and taken for a period of time under the authority that the town has to take title to that property. And I don't think we can lose sight of the fact that the Condemnation Commission's order vested title in the town, not in Stelpflugs, and a public roadway would have existed there in that area once it was constructed. People could drive up and down it. They could park on it. They could access whatever land was adjoining to it.
Counsel, can they take your property when you don't even know it's being taken?
And I think, Your Honor, they can, because it gets back to the point of when you are aware. There's so much that goes on in government now. The fact that they could regulatory take my property, I might not be aware of because, for instance, the legislature is giving a lot of regulatory authority or rulemaking authority to different branches of government right now, and not subject to public hearing. There's a lot of people in all around the state who are regulators that regularly promulgate rules that have the effect of law that could have the effect of taking land. I think if you start saying, well, it's when you find out, that's a very dangerous game to play because, again, would that be fair if I transferred my property to a third party via deed or gave an easement when someone finds out I've still transferred a portion of my property? That portion of my property was still taken. The fact that I suddenly have knowledge of it doesn't change the fact that it was taken at a previous time.
Well, the argument you make that there are a lot of departments that can regulate and in effect take, and by take you mean have leave you with no power, control, or value in the property.
That's correct.
That's what you have to argue here. But there you go. You're using the property just like always. You're doing everything the same, and you're in great bliss. Now, if you're right about all these regulations and all of them takings, well, then it's opening up the government to huge amounts of damages when the people are not even hurt. Not hurt in the sense that they have really had their use of the property restricted.
I think my faith in the jury system, and that's really what we're talking about, is remand. If this case, if the court sees fit that a taking has occurred, this matter will be remanded to a jury, and that jury is going to decide what the damages are. And I would suggest that juries will be very good at figuring out what the real value of this taking was. For instance, in this circumstance, we could not sell the properties during that period of time.
But did you try?
Yes. One of the parties lost their job and attempted to list their property and could not sell it. No.
What date was that?
That was after we had intervened, I would say, the middle of 93.
Due to the taking?
94. Due to this issue, because obviously they asked for my counsel, what is the situation here? And I said, you better tell them what's occurring. See, the problem with laying out this road was there was a question as to what effect that would have on the actual property that was remaining. Would we become non-conforming uses? How large would the road have to be? The design impact of having the town engineers come in and say, we need proper drainage. This was between these two houses through their lot lines. The impact could have been tremendous.
Well, but what was the effect of the commission, the highway commission, at that time in 93? I mean, right now, if you know that they're going to build a road, no one's done anything, that's a real problem for the property and for the sale. But no one's done anything, but you know it's a coming, right? So what was the status in 93?
When we intervened, the court said very clearly to us, you can go back to the condemnation commission to talk to them about damages, but this road is laid out. It's going through.
Is it part of the record that they couldn't sell this due to the taking?
That we have affidavits on file, yes.
Counsel, if I could start from the beginning here with an analytical question. You keep calling this a regulatory taking, but isn't it true that this isn't a regulatory taking at all? This is just a plain old eminent domain taking, albeit invoked by a private party. It's not a regulatory taking at all. And so the analysis that you've applied and the invocation of the regulatory temporary takings cases really, it really doesn't apply here.
I'm really using that jargon based on what the previous court decisions were defining what a regulatory taking is. I understand a regulatory taking as a temporary taking by a government agency that is overturned at some point along the road, which happened in this case. By order of the court, the laying out of the road was overturned.
Doesn't that just go to whether the taking was temporary, not whether it was a regulatory taking? And does it make any difference in the analysis?
I don't think it makes a difference. I think it's a temporary taking. If I had an inverse, if they had taken this without, under different circumstances where they had taken action that had taken title of the property, I could bring a Chapter 32 action. But they gave it back. They basically said, okay, we resolved all these issues here, title to your property reverts back to you.
Well, it does make a difference in the analysis, though, doesn't it? Because if it's just a plain old eminent domain taking for which compensation must be paid, the fact that it was never completed in this case because the ultimate order was rescinded means there's no compensation due. It's not a temporary regulatory taking. It's just a regular invocation of eminent domain by the town at the behest of a private party for which compensation is going to have to be paid once the road gets laid. But otherwise, in other words, the question is, can you have a temporary taking of a non-regulatory nature?
I think this, again, to me, this is very similar to Zinn from the standpoint that the authority existed for this, for the town to lay out the road. They took action to lay out the road and later rescinded that action. The fact that it's temporary doesn't diminish the fact that a taking occurred.
Well, Zinn was a truly regulatory taking because it was a DNR action that reestablished a high watermark on a lake, which effectively deprived the plaintiff of the ownership of the lake, and it persisted for a period of time, and then it was later rescinded. So it was really a taking by operation of regulations, which is what a regulatory taking is, right? And it was temporary in nature, and so the court said, therefore, it was compensable. But that's not what we have here. We have just a condemnation action, which is an ordinary garden variety sort of a taking, that ultimately was rescinded
My understanding is that the term regulatory taking doesn't necessarily define that it was taken by a regulation, but rather that it was taken by some operation of law through an action by a governmental body, and then that was reversed.
Well, how is it that you get that understanding? From what authority? Isn't that part of the problem in this whole area of the law?
Yes, it is.
That there really isn't a clear line of demarcation or delineation between regulatory takings, which may be temporary in nature and therefore compensable, and just an ordinary garden variety taking, which we all know is compensable, but if it doesn't ultimately happen, you're not going to get paid.
The real problem that we have is in the trenches, in the day-to-day functioning with governmental bodies, is the pendulum has swung way out towards the governmental bodies. The actual process to get approval or to do anything with a governmental body has swung in their favor. If these types of takings are not compensable, it encourages the governmental bodies to say, oh, well, we might have taken your land for 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it took to go through this, but, you know, we made a mistake, and therefore it's not compensable. I think in the discussion of both Zinn and Eberle, it was very, very clear that this kind of a taking should be compensated.
Well, in Eberle, they say, quote, takings which do not involve physical invasions of land are called regulatory takings, citing Hefker versus the City of Madison Planning Commission. Such takings are now well established in Wisconsin law. The rule applied by Wisconsin and federal courts is that a regulation or government action, so it's more than regulation, quote, must deny the landowner all or substantially all practical uses of a property in order to be considered a taking for which compensation is required, citing Zeely. And I don't know that Zeely was, quote, a regulatory taking. And then it goes on to the First English Evangelical Lutheran Church versus Los Angeles County, which I think is the lead federal case on that.
Yes, sir.
Was that a regulatory as defined by Justice Sykes, or was that closer to yours, or don't you remember?
That was really the start of the this kind of a regulatory temporary taking. It was the beginning of the discussion, really. The dissent was, I believe, Justice Brennan, and that was what has been cited to expand this area of the law. But that was my understanding of a regulatory taking, was it was any governmental action that temporarily took property for a period of time. I think it's a matter of definition, and I don't know why the definition came to that point.
In Los Angeles, the Los Angeles case, there was an ordinance prohibiting construction on the landowner's property. And that lasted for a long time, and they argued that that was a taking since you couldn't build on it. Just again, to discuss this, you have to argue that it's a full taking of the land and no use of it, but the rest of the land is okay.
And I think that's where the appellate court missed the point. This strip of land was taken. The fact that the rest of the land still existed isn't germane. That may be a problem for us from a damage standpoint, but that strip of land was taken. Under the way the appellate court looked at it, then a condemnation could occur and say, well, we took 20 feet of your land, but you have the remaining portion, so you really weren't damaged. That would create a terrible injustice, and not what I think the court has envisioned in Zinn and Eberle. We're looking at a situation where this portion of land was taken. That is my argument.
Thank you, counsel. You will have time for rebuttal. Mr. Hands, you represent the town board, town of Waukesha, and county.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. My name is Attorney James Hammons, and I represent the town of Waukesha in this case, and have since 1991. And I must say, back in 1991, when this started, I didn't envision all these years later we would be here. I told you in my brief that obviously any analysis of a taking has to start with Article 1, Section 13, but I think there's a second significant provision that the court has to recognize, and that's the provision that the court identified in Zinn versus State. It's Article 4, Section 27. which says that the state of legislature has the authority to establish procedures to be followed in condemnation cases. As I see the issue in this case, the issue is, if a municipality follows the procedure established by the legislature for the purpose of acquiring property, an actual taking, a physical taking, and if that process is not completed but stopped at some point in time, can you nonetheless have a regulatory taking? I think that's really the issue here. And I don't think you can. And you know, what's interesting is no one is complaining that the town didn't follow the procedures in this case. We thought we did exactly what we were supposed to do. As a matter of fact, we opposed this all the way through. And I don't believe the town can then be held responsible for a regulatory taking. I think it's important, and perhaps I didn't point this out well enough in my brief, if I could just take a minute to go back with the history of this case. When the first of all, if you look at Chapter 80, it provides that a property owner, as opposed to the municipality, can initiate this proceeding. The property owner in this case filed an affidavit with the town under Section 80.13. The affidavit said, I have property that's landlocked, and I need access to it. The statute says landlocked property is property surrounded by other property or surrounded by other property and water. The applicant said, my property has a conservancy zoning on an access strip. I can't get in. It's the same as being surrounded by water. The town board said, no, it's not. So the town board refused to lay out the road. He then went to court, and the court appointed the condemnation commission. Now, in the record, you find a map which depicts this subdivision. It's document 56, Exhibit 3, as well as it's in my Court of Appeals appendix on page 118. But I took a liberty just to pull a map out and highlight it. The yellow property is the property owned by Stelflug, and he has a 60-foot strip down to a road. The pink property is owned by a resident named Manuk, M-N-U-K, whose name doesn't really appear in any of the briefs. The affidavit that he filed with the town said, I can't get access to my property, so I want you to lay out a road across Manuk's property. Now, it had nothing to do with Scheich and Swartz. The court ordered him to lay the road out, or the court appointed the condemnation commission. In October of 1992, when we were at the condemnation commission, they started laying the road out over the Scheich and Swartz property, which wasn't even described in the application.
Who is this condemnation commission?
There are three resident electors of and freeholders of Waukesha County, appointed by the court.
By lot.
As a practical matter, there were some people that the judge felt had some expertise in real estate matters. Okay? Now, when the condemnation commission met, if you look at the transcript of that hearing, and again, you can find that, among other things, in document 56.
And follow up. The condemnation commission is not a body of the town.
No. The condemnation commission is appointed by the court. The court's sitting in an administrative capacity. But if you look at the transcript of that hearing on page 83, you'll find that the attorney for the town that was at the hearing said, wait a second, you're now talking about laying a road over Scheich and Schwartz's property, nothing to do with Manuk's. Don't you think you ought to give them notice? But the condemnation commissions went ahead and laid out the road. Now, you asked, the question was raised as to who has to give notice. Section 80.05 sub 2 says the applicant, Stelflug, shall give notice of this hearing and shall publish it. Had nothing to do with the town. Now, they laid out the road. The town said the town was not satisfied. First of all, the town was of the opinion that the statute didn't even apply because the property wasn't landlocked. Unfortunately, the statute isn't, in my opinion, real clear on how you appeal this thing. How do you get this issue before the court? And obviously I was wrong in hindsight. I looked at section 80.25, and it says that if a taxpayer of the municipality, which is required to pay damages, can appeal the decision of the condemnation commission. So John Brunner, who was our town chairman, in his name filed an appeal. Said, we don't believe that, number one, that this is landlocked, and number two, you're laying property across, or a road out across property that people weren't even involved in this proceeding. The trial court dismissed the appeal and said you don't have standing because the town hasn't been awarded and be required to pay any damages. We went to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals said the same thing. That's why it took from 1992 till 1993 before Scheiss and Schwartz actually became aware of what happened. At that point, after the Court of Appeals tossed us out, Stelflug gave us the check. I sent the letter to the property owners, and it's in the record there, it's cited, and said, here's what happened, here's your check. I can't give you legal advice. There's some tight time frames here. You may want to seek legal advice as to what to do.
How much was the check for?
Scheiss received $2,197.36, and Schwartz $2,311.24. Those checks were tendered, and then we went through the proceeding, got to ready for a jury trial, and they entered a stipulation where they withdrew it and reserved the right to proceed on a temporary taking basis.
Now, there's no question, based on your discussion, that the land was taken by somebody. There was a taking. Well, obviously, you sent a check to these people.
There was a taking. You're right.
This just makes common sense to say there was a taking. The question is who basically would be
responsible? Yes.
When did you send the check?
December 28th, 1993.
I thought you were contesting whether there was a legal taking, because of the Court of Appeals ruling, which is.
Well, I'm contesting whether there's a regulatory taking, right? Because that's what the Court of Appeals, well, that's the argument that they're presenting here, that there was a regulatory taking. Now, there's one statement in my brief that I filed with the court that I believe I need to correct. I've argued throughout this proceeding that there was no actual taking because the Condemnation Commission, that the court never recorded the Condemnation Commission order. But as I prepared for the hearing today and I read the statute again, I noticed that section 80.01 says that the filing of an order with the clerk of the town in which it is situated is a recording within the meaning of this section. And so I think I have to bring that to your attention. I always assumed that recording meant recording in the register of deeds, but it would appear that the recording would have resulted in the taking. But I don't think that alters the issue before the court because they're not arguing actual taking. As a matter of fact, they stipulated to dismiss that Chapter 80 proceeding, the actual taking claim. All right. The only thing that they have reserved is this regulatory taking, which I don't believe can exist.
Well, and that gets back to my question. The regulatory takings cases and the whole jurisprudence in this area has to do with land use regulations and, you know, environmental regulations. For the most part, it's other sorts of regulatory schemes that effectuate either a temporary or permanent deprivation of the use or of all or substantially all of somebody's property, which is therefore compensable. As a taking, and what we have here is a situation where we have an actual physical taking that's initiated and arguably completed, but then rescinded. And is there any authority for the proposition that that effectuates a temporary regulatory taking, or are we just driving off of all the pure regulatory taking cases?
I'm trying to grapple too with the theory of the argument, but assuming there was an actual taking with the recording, but the party stipulated that was vacated. If that's vacated, you cannot now come back and say there was a regulatory taking during that same period of time. But I think the more fundamental issue is this. I'd like you to ponder. Assume that there was a condemnation under Chapter 32 as opposed to Chapter 80. And town or the county or the state adopted a notice of public necessity that we need your land. And they went out and they hired an appraiser. And the appraiser met with the property owner, and he completed the appraisal. And then the property owner was given a notice that they had a right to get an appraiser. They got the appraiser. Then they negotiated in good faith. Then there was a jurisdictional offer that was submitted. And then there was an award of damages that was given to the property owner. But just before the award of damages was recorded, the state after, let's say, 18 months, changed its mind and said, I'm sorry, we went through this process, but we don't need the property. If you hold there's a regulatory taking here, I think you're opening the door for regulatory takings anytime there's an exercise of a governmental function which doesn't go to fruition or completion.
What?
Well, it seems to me that your analogy is incomplete, because the jurisdictional offer, at least in your example, our hypothetical, was not accepted, correct?
Yes.
Whereas here, it was done. They couldn't transfer. The title had transferred.
All right, but if you carry that to its next logical conclusion, let's assume the jurisdictional offer was accepted or the award of damages was resolved. If the parties, including Scheiss and Swartz, then stipulated, we'll vacate this, tear it up, I take the property back.
Well, let me change your hypo just a little bit and say that the jurisdictional offer was tendered to the landowner, to me as the landowner, and I accept it. And then the town dithers and battles and 18 months later says, we don't really want your property. I mean, for 18 months, I've been without the ability to transfer that property.
Well, I think that's what Justice Abramson referred to in the dissent in the recent case, the Eberle case, about a cloud on title. And I think that's what you talked about in Maxi Development, where you put an official map or an official on a road on your official map and was there for years, and there was discussions about putting the road through, and then later on they changed their mind. Those are the types of things that governments have to have the ability to plan or even start carrying out procedures and stop at some point before it's final and not be subject to a regulatory takings claim.
Or if Mr. Hamas, let me interrupt if I might and ask you this. You've obviously read the Zinn decision and the Eberle decision.
Yes.
Forgetting whether it's a regulatory taking, it was certainly, you would agree, and I believe you have agreed, it's a temporary taking here.
Yes.
All right. How do you distinguish the Zinn holding and the Eberle holding that when you have a temporary taking that might later be set aside, that it's compensable under Article 1, Section 13?
Well, the distinction, I guess, I would say as follows. First of all, frankly, I've always had a little bit of difficulty with the Zinn case, because I always view that as more of an actual taking than a regulatory taking. In your decision, you state title to the property was transferred to the state. Well, if the recording of this document was a transfer of the road to the town, then why wasn't the title there an actual taking as opposed to regulatory? But assuming it's a regulatory taking, the distinction is that the DNR there was following an administrative procedure. Here, we are following a procedure that under Article 4, Section 27 of the Wisconsin Constitution, the legislature has said in condemnation proceedings, this is how you go about doing that. We're following that procedure to allow just compensation to be obtained by the property owner. And I think that is the distinction. In the most recent case, the Eberle decision, it was, as I interpret the decision, it was the court's conclusion that the arbitrary and unreasonable action of the Board of Adjustments in failing to do that, which was subsequently reversed, is what gave rise to the claim. They weren't simply following a procedure. They acted unreasonably. Again, here, no one is saying the town acted arbitrarily or unreasonably. No one is saying we didn't follow the correct procedure. We did everything that we were supposed to do. It took a long time to get there, but we did what we were supposed to do.
But in the meantime, I'm looking at the footnote 23 in the Eberle case, that where the government takes an action which strips a property owner of beneficial use of his or her property, just compensation is constitutionally required, regardless of whether the government later restores the use of all of the use of the property to the property owner. That's
a fair statement. So,
that's basically what happened here. There was a taking. Now, whether we're bantering about whether it was regulatory or how it got to be taken, but we know that it was given back. But there was a period of time that these people were deprived of the use of this property. And as stated, and I was not aware, but it's apparently in the record that there's an affidavit, during that time, one of the people wanted to convey this property because he or she had lost their job.
Correct.
So the point is that we have two problems, and I won't disagree with what you're saying on whether it is a regulatory or not. We're going to be determining that. But in the part of just compensation under the Constitution, you're not arguing that there should be some just compensation, or are you?
No, I'm arguing there was no regulatory taking.
There's no regulatory taking, therefore
no compensation is owed.
Yeah, that seems to, and that argument is curious in the sense that from a constitutional standpoint, we know that there was a taking of land.
Physical taking here.
And it deprived somebody of that property.
And they were compensated for that.
And that was the $2,000.
That's correct. And they were paid that and they kept that.
And the main argument here is that they should not be entitled to any attorney fees, basically.
Well, that's what got us to the Court of Appeals.
Yeah, that's the main concern.
Sure, because, you know, under the statute, the applicant Stelflug paid the money that we paid to the property owners. It was the assessment of attorney's fees, obviously, which, right or wrong, the trial court decision, that's what prompted the appeal. With respect to that issue on attorney's fees, in the last brief filed with the Court of Appeals, the petitioners acknowledged that Section 3228 doesn't apply. They're now asking you to extend that rule. I understand, my research is that, you know, that we follow the American rule. I've heard no exceptions cited, such as tortious conduct or something like that, that would allow the court to provide an authority for the court to extend that rule. I would also point out that in 3228, under that procedure, attorney's fees are allowed only if the property owner recovers 15% more, 15% plus $750 more than the highest and best offer. They don't receive it all the time. And secondly, they don't receive litigation expenses, attorney's fees for anything that occurred before the date of the taking. So, even the legislature has limited it. I believe that if attorney's fees are to be awarded in constitutional takings, that's more properly a function of the legislature that ought to be considered there.
Counsel, let me see if I understand this thing. Article 1, Section 13 says, property of no person shall be taken for public use without just compensation. You're conceding that here there was a temporary taking.
Temporary actual taking. Yes.
Okay. And your position is that just compensation has been paid with the tender of the $2,000 here in terms.
Together with their stipulation that the action be dismissed except their claim for a regulatory taking.
Now they're contending that $2,000 isn't enough and asserting that in the record they should have a jury trial because they're entitled to more, if you will, compensatory fees and damages and also entitled to attorney's fees.
Yes.
Is that?
That's how I understand it. But in order to get to that, the court has to conclude that if there's an actual taking which occurred in this case in accordance with the provisions of Chapter 80, and nobody disputes that, which is then set aside by stipulation of the parties, can you then use that procedural mechanism as a bootstrap to say, well, there was a regulatory taking during the same period of time that there was an actual taking? I'm at a loss as to how you can do that. You can't have both.
Where in the record, just as an aside, is this, if you know, this affidavit that says they were trying to sell the property?
Document 56 is the affidavit in support of it.
Yes.
The judgment would be
one of them in the
affidavits from each of the parties. So I think that's where it's found at.
Counsel, how is it that we got the same amount of damages for this taking when it characterizes a temporary taking of a regulatory nature as when it was a permanent...
You mean, how did the trial judge arrive at that?
Right.
It's really not articulated in the decision. I mean,
it's the same exact amount, isn't it, that the Condemnation Commission said was due and owing just compensation for the total, complete, actual, physical taking of this property.
Right.
And that was awarded as the damages for the temporary taking for a period of years.
Trial court's decision does not articulate how that figure was arrived at. But if I might, in real briefly, in response to another, I believe, question that was raised...
Are you challenging that here at the moment?
No.
Why not? I mean, they got the land back.
I suppose because
of the potential to sell
them. Well, no, because the statute says that the applicant, Stelflug, pays that amount. Stelflug paid that amount to the town. We wrote the checks out to them. And if you notice in the appellate court decision, they tried to argue, well, we want that money back, and he said he didn't file a cross appeal. And that's why I assume they're not here today. But there was another question raised... slips my mind now on about the period of time. Assuming a regulatory taking, if Scheiss and Schwartz were involved in the process beginning in 1994 all the way through 1995, how can you claim there's a regulatory taking? I mean, if there was a regulatory taking where they weren't involved in the proceedings, it seemed to me that it had to be between when it was initiated by the Condemnation Commission in 92 and the time that they became involved in the case.
Mr. Hamas, yes. Is the real fight here over the litigation expenses? That's what the town would be liable for if plaintiffs were successful. Is that not correct?
Absolutely. Well, I suppose, I mean, that's my view on it. Obviously, if the court were to conclude that there's a regulatory taking here and that it has to be, that they're entitled to a jury trial, I suppose we would then be exposed to whatever damages might be awarded in that case. But, you know, again, this procedure in Chapter 80 is rather peculiar because we didn't initiate the proceeding. And in Chapter 80, if there's an actual taking, the applicant pays the money. So if there's a regulatory taking, I would assume that the court would conclude that the applicant has to pay that as well because they initiated the proceeding.
Well, if Article 1, Section 13 talks about just compensation for a taking of a temporary taking or a regulatory taking, whatever, if it talks about just compensation, what is the argument that litigation expenses would not be just compensation?
Well, the litigation expenses under the American rule that we follow in this state are only recoverable to the extent that they're contained in the rules of civil procedure or if there's a specific statute. There is no authority that I'm aware of the court will be making some new law, some historical law, if you allowed litigation expenses under that theory.
So your approach is that Chapter 814 really applies here, and that if, for instance, they were to be successful, what they should recover would only be those costs and attorney's fees applicable under Chapter 814. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Not only that, it also, you know, that procedure eliminates the type of taking cases with a cherry tree where somebody wants to make a big argument about something that is relatively minor. If someone looks at it, they make a business or a judgment decision. If you open the door to litigation expenses and any kind of a regulatory taking, you'll be handling a lot of these cases, as will the appellate courts. There's simply no authority for it.
Let me, if I might, give you the argument that I see on the other side. Most of the time when cases of this nature are brought claiming violation either for regulatory taking or temporary taking under Article 1, Section 13, there's also a claim under 42 U.S.C. 1983. And as I understand the federal case law, the federal cases would seem to indicate that indeed litigation expenses could be recoverable and oftentimes are recoverable if there's been a taking under the U.S. Constitution. Why wouldn't that same line of reasoning apply in this particular case?
Well, my understanding is that litigation expenses are recoverable only if you pursue under 42 U.S.C. 1983 through 1988. And And that's why everyone, including myself, that pleads those kind of cases, pleads 1983, and that's why inevitably the court will say, well, the issue's not ripe yet, exhaust your state court remedies.
Is what this court did in Everett.
Exactly. And as I, you know, if this is an issue on recovery of attorney's fees, if there should be a policy adopted, I believe it's a legislative function. And I believe it should stay there. They've done that in Chapter 32. To some extent, they've done that in Chapter 80, because Section 80.13 sub 4M provides that attorney's fees incurred by the town, where the town supervisors lay out the road rather than the condemnation commission, are recoverable as an expense against the applicant. Unless the court has any more questions.
Well, let me see if I can summarize your position. There was a taking here, an actual taking of the property.
Yes.
What date was that?
October 19th, 1992. The decision has to be filed with the court within 10 days. So.
Okay. But that taking was then, in effect, rescinded.
By stipulation of the parties.
Stipulation of the parties. What date was that?
February 28th, 1995.
Okay. The trial court said that they had to be compensated for a taking from 94 to 95. They didn't go back to 92.
Yes.
And the trial court said because there was in effect they were never harmed during that period.
Trial court said compensation, they were entitled to during that period of time. I still don't understand the reasoning. I believe the trial court concluded a regulatory taking.
Pardon?
I believe the trial court's conclusion was that there was a regulatory taking during that period of time.
All right.
Because that was the only issue after dismissal, there was an amended complaint filed, and the only issue was, is there a regulatory taking?
Okay. And your position is actual taking, that's it. And they should get compensated. And how much should they get compensated for? The amount paid. And how long was that actual taking in your position?
October 1992 to October 29th, 1992 to February 28th, 1995.
And that your position is they've been fully paid?
My position is
that actual
they were fully paid. And if that wasn't fair compensation, they waived any right to seek fair compensation because they stipulated to dismissing with the day we were going to have a jury trial.
All right. In their position, this is all a regulatory taking. How does this fit with the Howell case, which you cite in the brief, which was...
Howell Plaza. That's where the state had placed the road on the official map for years.
Right.
And they even began negotiations with the taking.
Everybody knew that they were interested in putting a road in that area. So it was a cloud on the title.
Exactly.
Right.
And they said, we really couldn't develop this during that period of time. And the court concluded that cloud on the title, which was a cloud created by the exercise of potential exercise of condemnation rights, does not constitute a regulatory taking.
Right, and that was an inverse condemnation case.
Yes.
So now we got three things. We got condemnation.
Yes.
Inverse condemnation and regulatory taking.
Well, an inverse condemnation is a proceeding to receive compensation for an actual taking.
Okay.
But in Howell, just so I get this correct.
This is Howell Plaza that I'm talking
Howell
about, the
Plaza,
1979, the second Howell case.
Yeah. That was where the taking could not occur, if I'm just reading this, because the agency lacked the legal authority to do the taking. They didn't have, it was not a taking there, if I understand the footnote here.
Well, I would certainly that was the rationale expressed at that time, but I think if it was looked at again 20 years later, I don't know as though whether the agency had the authority to effect the taking would be as critical a factor as whether or not a deprivation of use occurred.
It wasn't that they didn't have authority to take it. It was that they didn't have authority while this process was going on to stop
them from developing.
The property owner from developing.
That's correct. But again, I believe the analogy applies because if we follow the procedure in either Chapter 80 or Chapter 32 that the legislature says we must follow in these condemnation proceedings, and we abort that procedure at some point, I just don't see how that can be a restriction that results in governmental taking. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Moore?
I think the couple of issues in terms of the facts of this case, the checks were never cashed, so we never accepted the compensation for this amount of money. So there's in the record, that's very clear. Those checks remain. The money is still in the coffers of the town.
But why didn't the stipulation of dismissal by the parties act to essentially declare that the value? You're asking for a jury trial on this issue.
Because the jury trial that we were asking for, that we were on the eve of, was for the laying of the land, the road, that had already occurred. We were asking for the permanent taking. That's what that jury trial was all about. Once that was removed, we then said, all right, we no longer have a permanent taking situation, but we're reserving our right for that period of time from 92 to 95 when you took title to our land, which the town has conceded. That title had passed. So I believe that we reserved our right at that point. And I think since the town has conceded that and is set forth in Zinn, and once the test is satisfied that there has been taking, even though the property owner has regained full use of the property due to the government's rescission of the restriction, the government unit which has taken the property must then provide just compensation for the period of the taking. Let's keep in mind that Chapter 80 does give the town a remedy to go back to Stelpflug and say, you were the applicant, you caused this temporary taking, and therefore you will pay the cost. I think they have that argument, they retain that argument. I'm surprised that Stelpflug didn't pursue that avenue because I think it existed and was discussed at the time that went forward on the case. I think this differs from Howell Plaza in that this wasn't a cloud on title, this was taking a title.
Okay, but let me just assume that there was a taking here, an actual taking from October 19, 92 to February 95. That is, the town, county, whoever, owned this strip of land which it could use for a road. Okay? That's your position, isn't it?
Correct.
All right. That is an absolute taking. That's your position.
Correct.
And you should be paid for it.
Correct.
Now, does it matter that in 95 the town gave it back to you?
No. Because the DNR gave Zinn their property back, but the taking still occurred.
So what you want, if I understand it, is that there has been an actual taking of this land for approximately 2.5 years or whatever.
Correct.
Right? And that, therefore, you are entitled to compensation for that.
Correct.
And this whole discussion about regulatory taking really is irrelevant.
To me, it is. I'm strictly using it as definitional in the way the case law has used it, is when there's a temporary taking by a governmental unit, it's regulatory.
You're using it just temporary, so that if the government condemned my house because they were going to put they wanted that and tear it down to get to the lake, then they pay me for it. Right? And I'm not happy with the price. But then 3 years later, they decide they're not going to take it, and they're going to deed it back to me. You think they ought to pay me for the 3 years that I was living in that house, but that they were threatening to tear it down.
Exactly. That's a measure of damages. That's an issue of how much, not if. And I think that's what this case revolves around. I think a little what the court is struggling with is getting to that question of how much. But that's an issue for the jury, and I think juries will look. It's my problem to go back to the trial court level and to amass the experts and the testimony that's necessary to say this is what we really lost. And as in Zinn, as the court mentioned in Zinn, that's a tough nut to crack.
Well, it's not just how much, but who pays.
Well, I think the governmental authority is the one that pays. Now, if they have redressed the stealth fluke, that's another issue. The problem with these regulatory takings and why I'm asking for litigation expenses to be extended is not to disrupt the American rule, but from the standpoint that the temporary manner of takings does not usually carry the losses necessary to support litigation. So we basically have a remedy or a right without a remedy. We have this right to say you can't take our land, but because it's de minimis in value during that period of time, well, that's too bad for you. It puts governmental bodies in a situation where they can take basically title and land and say, well, you know, we made a mistake, we'll give it back, and since you really don't have a big stick to hit us over the head, we can do that instead of doing it the way we're supposed to do it statutorily by condemning it and owning it and being done with it.
Now, the fact that even if we accept it, then we really get back to the amount of damages because this is just the spike in the case. The 2.5 years for this strip is de minimis, or probably is de minimis. And then you still have the problem of why you should get attorney fees because you're not under 32 and you're not under a 1983, right?
I'm clearly asking for an extension of law. I do not believe a taking under these purposes, under this circumstance, is de minimis because of the fact that we couldn't sell during that period of time and there may have been nonconformity.
Counsel, I just want follow up on that. The complaint aversed that during the period of time you were not able to sell it. I'm still not able to locate any affidavit that indicates that you you had a buyer or you were impaired in any way. There is such an affidavit?
I believe on file in the original appellate court, and I was looking because I don't have my appellate court brief here.
I don't. But I'm not saying there isn't one. I'm just saying that I'm not able to locate it, and the reference by your opposing counsel didn't give it to me either. So, and that plays into whether or not it's really de minimis. In your complaint of Bruges, you couldn't sell it, of course, but some of that period of time you didn't even know that there was a title vested in the municipality. So, I assume.
I think opposing counsel identified that as document 56.
Yeah, I've got it.
I think, again, that goes to an issue of damages. Once a taking has occurred, if I have a problem with damages, if a litigant, a plaintiff, has a problem with damages over the taking, that's their problem.
Okay, but I mean, what if you have no damages? Why should we get an engine going if there's nothing there? I mean, if you cannot assert, let's say this whole period of time, let's say from October 29th, 1992 until February 28th, 1995, the municipality held title, but you did not know it until February 28th, 1995. Do you think you have any right to assert damages then?
I would say from a standpoint that may be worth a dollar, but yes, they took my property. The fact that I didn't have knowledge of it is the fact that someone might have converted my property for 3 years at a time, took cash out but put it back, and I didn't know about it, that's still a conversion.
And you're asserting that there are damages here, someplace you're asserting that.
Yes.
In other words, that lost opportunity. That
yes.
Can I ask one last question?
Certainly, Justice Brooks.
Mr. Murren, was there a waiver of your right to jury trial here? What concerns me, obviously, is that you've talked about a jury trial and wanting a jury trial. What then happens is you get a trial to the court. Judge Becker makes a decision on damages and on litigation costs. Was there a waiver of your right
to
jury trial?
No, we didn't have a trial to the court. We brought this on the issue of summary judgment, strictly on the issue of whether or not we were entitled to compensation. And I did not expect the court. The court went beyond my motion for summary judgment and said, "And here's your damages." We in our motion for summary
judgment. Something you didn't ask for, she gave to you.
Correct.
Speedy trial.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes our hearing on 97.